Millions of people are living better. They are enjoying a healthier lifestyle, learning more about overcoming obstacles and keeping a positive outlook. Now you can be a member of the club. This is the Living to 100 Club with Dr. Joe Casciani. Our guests share incredible stories and advice, bring new outlooks on wellness, and show you how to keep moving forward. Now, here is your host, Dr. Joe Casciani.
Well, thank you for joining us today for another episode of the Living to 100 Club radio show. I'm Joe Casciani, your host, and we are on the Voice America Network. On today's show, we're going to be talking about sexual diversity in older adults. What does sexual wellness mean in later life? Are there still taboos in discussing this topic? We hope not, but we'll be exploring these with our guest. Frequent listeners on this show know about our club, the Living to 100 Club. Our members are all about turning aging on its head and defining ourselves as strong, resilient, and capable of living life to its fullest. It also means rethinking stereotype views about getting older and throwing off those limitations we put on older adults. I'm always encouraging others to not be slowed down in our advancing years and instead having a mindset of living to 100. So let's get started. Dr. Maggie Symes is an assistant professor in gerontology in the Center on Aging at the University of Kansas. Her background is in counseling psychology and public health with a doctoral degree from the University of Kansas and a master's in public health from San Diego State University. Her postdoctoral training was concentrated in geropsychology and neuropsychology, as well as research in cancer health disparities and aging. Dr. Symes was a research assistant professor at San Diego State University, working on a grant-funded research from the Alzheimer's Association on sexual decision-making among cognitively compromised older adults, a very controversial subject. Dr. Symes' research interests are centered on sexual health in later life and across the lifespan, sexual decision-making in long-term care residents, and person-centered long-term care. Welcome, Maggie.
Thank you, Joe. I appreciate it. I will say I work at Kansas State University now, even though Rock Chalk, I was a KU alum.
Oh, okay. So Kansas State University.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Well, welcome.
Thank you for
being a part of this program. Let's get started. What led you into this specialty area? Not very common, I'm sure, but how did you get started?
Yeah. So I blame it on my mentor, Dr. Linda Mona. She introduced me, I think, to the importance of advocacy for sexual health when I was an intern back in the day at the VA Long Beach Hospital and spinal cord injury. And she saw something in me, I think, and I came to know that as advocacy. I was an advocate at the core, and I saw her passion for sexual health in persons with disabilities and spinal cord injuries, and I found out, lo and behold, that a whole population of people were being dismissed from the sexual health discussion, and that included older adults. And I said, that's what I want to do then. Have at it. So she really encouraged me in that area to take that advocacy for sexual health from what I was learning in disability over to my interests in aging. So that's how I got started.
Hmm. And you've been staying along the same track since
Yes.
you started.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So let's talk about sexual expression and diversity of sexual expression in older adults. What are we referring to here?
Okay. So there's so much, I think, that fits under the umbrella of sexual expression, and that's what I hope people take home about diversity. There are many different intersecting identities that participate in sex and intimacy in older adulthood in a multitude of ways with many different goals. So essentially, I'm saying that we need to blow the lid off the term sex, especially in older adulthood, and embrace that it can mean everything from celibacy to casual hookup sex, solo sexual activities, cuddling and intimacy with your partner, feeling desirable, having a fantasy life, or being empowered to live your valued sexual and gender identity in older age. And there are so many things that go into it because it's a deeply personal and value-laden issue. And we have forced people as a society into such a narrow box or for sex that what I often want to do is first ask people, well, who gets to be sexual? What does society tell us who gets to be sexual? And we tend to see those definitions as very narrow, the beautiful, the young, the heterosexual, the married. I know all of those conceptualizations. And for me, that needs to be blown up because it certainly dismisses older adults and many diverse older adults from acceptable definitions of sex.
So we're exposing this, we're investigating this area, but it also holds true for younger adults, right? I mean, it may be more so for seniors, but a lot of these restrictions and taboos are still, you know, in place for younger adults. I mean, what does it mean to be sexy? And can we be sexy without being also beautiful and stunning and, you know, all of that? So, you're focusing on the older age group where we also have some of these same taboos with younger adults. So you'd agree with that, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that's good. I mean, it's, as you say, you're taking it out of the box and let's look at all sides, all dimensions, no more labels. It's still a taboo subject, though, right? I mean, why is it not more openly discussed? Let's just focus on this age group, please. If, you know, say 50 and over, 60 and over, why is it still so limited in our discussion?
Well, the short answer is that we live in an ageist world. Where being older is equated with frailty and incompetence and poor health and loneliness. And for this discussion, asexual, right? And many other stereotype versions of older age. So sex doesn't fit within those conceptions of older age, right? And therefore, we make fun of older adult sexuality when we think of things like the cougar for older women and dirty old men and the bad grandpa versions, right, of older men's sexuality. Or it's completely ignored because it's incongruent with what we think and believe of people who are older. They don't do that. That's wrong. That's disgusting. And some evidence of that in our fields are that people who work with older adults, when they're trained, they aren't trained at all in sexual health and wellness. They're not taught about issues of sex and intimacy that are really important to older adults. And I would hazard a guess that the words sex and older are never spoken in the same sentence in many health professions, unless by accident, right? So here we have a cadre of professionals who are ignorant to the issues of older adults. How do we expect it to be talked about, right? And in fact, research tells us that it isn't, and that providers are uncomfortable with the topic and they don't know how to address it. And that older adults are hesitant to bring it up themselves. So I think we just need to do a better job of addressing these ageist undertones of our world and our health system and prepare people to not only talk about their own sexuality with confidence as an older person, but open the door as a provider and speak to older adults about sex. It's not Pandora's box, right? It can be a very simple conversation to start.
Yeah, I'm thinking the older adults themselves, I mean, seniors in whatever decade, 70s, 80s, 90s, they're also uncomfortable. And if the healthcare provider is uncomfortable, it's we're going nowhere, right? I mean,
absolutely.
So the healthcare practitioner needs to encourage this openness, this discussion, this kind of freedom to explore and look at attitudes and opinions. So where does it change first? Who changes first? Or that's a general question, I know, but what's your guess? Who's more comfortable? Who's more comfortable with it? The healthcare field or the individuals themselves?
I think that's partially a generational conversation, right, too, because we know that as generations pass, we're becoming more comfortable with a sexual conversation, more liberal in our sexual attitudes, so that as different generations of adults emerge into older adulthood, that might change a little bit with confidence of the older person. It might also change if we ever, make a dent in ageism in our society. Mm-hmm. But in my perspective, the onus is on the training systems to stop, purporting these ageist myths and start training people, because if anything is movable, it's our ability to open the door to that conversation. And I think that the research would say that older adults would be comfortable walking through that door, but you got to open it.
Right.
So I think really it probably the easiest, but yet still the hardest nut to crack, it seems, is to improve the training and address ageism in healthcare professionals.
Sure. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. We had a guest on several weeks ago who was a gerontologist at San Diego State, and he talked about ageism, of course, and stereotyping. And, his name is Joaquin Anguera. And Joaquin was saying that there really is a shift, and we're doing away with a lot of these ageist stereotyped attitudes. And I'm sure the whole notion of sexuality is moving along with that shift. So we are seeing a change. But I wonder how much, are there still religious constraints, or maybe adult children who are uncomfortable with their parents' relationships? How much are these other constraints? Let's start with religion. Is that still a factor here?
Yes, it definitely is. I would say moral beliefs in general about sex are going to probably present some constraints for a lot of people. But for, again, generationally, an older generation tends to buy in more to beliefs about sex being only for reproduction or only inside a marriage or needing to be heterosexual or needing to be, or fidelity being very much important and just one person that you're true to. So we still have a lot of those beliefs that are strongly held. In fact, there is some interesting research that's ongoing that kind of keeps a meter on those beliefs in older adults. They are shifting, again, as generations kind of move through with more sexually liberal attitudes. However, moral beliefs that are often tied to religion are always going to be important in sexual expression and always going to be important to be mindful of when you're having a discussion about it, right?
Yeah, and adult children, I'm sure, as they're looking at their parents, or whether the parents are living in the community or in retirement homes or even nursing homes, the adult children also have some pretty strong beliefs about how diverse their parents' sexual expression should be. I mean, that's got to be a big factor as well, right?
Definitely so. When we think about the things that you mentioned, how you age in different ways in different places in your life, there are constraints on that sexual intimate expression that are going to exist because you either live with an adult child or an adult child has maybe decision-making power for you or is very influential in your life. And there are a lot of adult children out there who don't want their parents pursuing sexual relationships because it doesn't fit with who they think they are or their own morals, or there may be a divorce or perhaps a widow situation where they don't want to think about them being untrue to another parent. So they can exert a lot of influence, right, on whether or not an older adult remarries, repartners, has sexual relationships. And certainly if you're living in a nursing home, you just threw in a whole nother set of constraints about that, because adult children tend to have a lot of power in decision-making in those situations, right? So even though maybe legally sometimes they don't necessarily have power over sexual decisions, it feels like it. A lot of times an administration will often listen very heavily to an adult child who may be deciding whether their parent stays in that institution or not, right?
Right. So. Yeah. You're absolutely right. I can share an interesting story. I work at a nursing home, and one of the female residents got kind of attached to a male resident. The female was widowed, and the male is divorced, and both were placed there in the facility. And they became very close and very attached, and it was companionship or just spending time. And she was more disabled, so he was able to help her transfer and push her around to activities and all of that. And I went in one day, and the female was talking about maybe getting married, and her daughter was having a lot of confusion or, you know, real uneasiness about that. New relationship. And then, of all things, the facility, in a very progressive frame of mind, decided to let them share a room. So they moved both of them into the same room, and they could share the room, even though they were not married. And both of the residents were just super thrilled with that. And, you know, very innocent relationship. And I think the adult daughter came to accept it as well. So things are changing. We do see progress in these areas. I mean, that's a perfect example of getting rid of some of these traditional constraints and what's allowed and what's not allowed, and really making some adjustments. The first time I've heard of that, but...
Yeah, it's rare.
Yeah, and they're both doing very well. You know, they're continuing. They're always smiling. He's pushing her in the wheelchair and going to bingo and taking her to activities and all of this. So it's good to see that kind of new expression. Yeah.
It's funny how people thrive when they're allowed to connect.
Yeah. So we're about to take a short break, Maggie, but when we come back, let's talk about how these constraints, these prescriptions affect the individuals and how it inhibits their own comfort level and expression. So that'd be okay. I'd like to pick up there. So it's time to take a short break. If any of our listeners have questions, please feel free to call them into 866-472-5792, or you can send an email to info@living2100.club. This is Joe Casciani, and my guest is Dr. Maggie Syme. You're listening to the Voice of America Health and Wellness Channel. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Visit the Living to 100 Club online store. We feature products and wellness information that help maintain healthy lifestyles, promote mental and physical fitness, and allow you to take control of your future. You'll find a wide array of affordable items for staying active, monitoring your health, and adapting to physical changes. Most popular are items for travel, even with your pets, exercise equipment and clothing, heart rate monitors, and personal care items, and our unique Yes, I'm Positive collection. The Living to 100 Club Store offers convenient solutions for active lifestyles. Be sure to spend time on our Learn page for the club's inspiring blog series and add your name to our email list. The Living to 100 Club online store for awareness, convenience, and independence. Find us at living2100.club. That's living2100.club.
Are you living a healthy and fit lifestyle? It's not just related to your physical well-being. It also means a healthier mind, confidence, improved health, stamina, and fitness. Talking with Tremaine brings it all to you. Host Tremaine Ellis, along with her husband and co-host David Ellis, will offer support, advice, guidance, and motivation to keep you in your best shape, both physically and mentally. Talking with Tremaine can be heard live every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time and 3 Pacific on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
Have you become a member yet? Sign up now to become a member of Voice America. It's always free and easy. Plus, you get to take advantage of some great member benefits. Get unlimited access to millions of hours of on-demand content across all of our channels. Keep track of your favorite episodes, shows, and hosts in your own customizable library. Find out what shows you might be interested in based on your favorites. Plus, you get insider access with our newsletter. Membership gives you more. Sign up at voiceamerica.com and click register at the top right.
Real Life Solutions, Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are listening to the Living to 100 Club with Dr. Joe Casciani. To reach the program today, please call in to 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to info@livingto100.club. Now, back to this week's show.
All right, we're back. Thanks to everyone for staying with us. We're talking with Dr. Maggie Syme about sexual expression in older adults and the diversity of sexual expression. Maggie, just before the break, we started to touch on how all of these constraints, whether they're internal or external, how they affect the individuals themselves who feel like they can't express their needs for others and have sexual relationships with others. How does it, what's the toll that it takes on their own functioning?
I think that some of the things that we have to consider are certainly the fact that people adopt ageist beliefs throughout their lives and start to internalize it and believe that sex is wrong or disgusting or not for me, oftentimes as we get older. And this doesn't have to be like right at the top of your consciousness. This kind of can be underneath the hood a little bit. And this might stop an older person from pursuing their sexual goals because they don't think it's okay or right or even attainable because they're older, which can certainly cause stress for an older adult. Potentially some mental health problems such as depression for not connecting, feeling lonely and not pursuing some of those social connectedness benefits that we can get from intimacy and sexuality. But also it might be distressing for an older adult who's already pursuing sexual experiences and feeling a little incongruent or like they're deviant from what they're supposed to be doing as a good, quote unquote, older person. We don't have a lot of research that tells us when you feel, you know, stigma about your own sexuality, these are the for sure outcomes, but we certainly do have a lot of observational case studies and providers who will tell you that, for instance, in the nursing home, I had a gentleman who used to be in the nursing home and was often seeing these relationships evolve and then devolve as the nursing home split apart residents. And often they would decompensate physically, mentally, and they would be doing much more poorly and new physical problems and new mental health problems because they weren't allowed that social connection and that meaning that they wanted to pursue, which is very, very sad to me to think that in a life where we're trying to promote resilience and the top of our abilities to connect and feel benefited and have a quality life, that we would just, because we're risk averse, take away benefits from people that are certainly well within their capability to achieve.
Sure. So what we're really talking about is fostering or facilitating this sense of sexual wellness for individuals and for those around these individuals, for them to feel free and to adopt new patterns of behavior and in sexual encounters and sexual experiences. So as we talk about sexual wellness, I know we've been touching on a lot of the obstacles here. Are there any other challenges to sexual wellness? Are there any other things that get in the way? Anything that we haven't talked about?
Sure. And I do want to really try to help people understand that there are many different ways in which you can be challenged or benefited or promoted in your sexual goals. And I try to think of them in some categories, Joe: the biological side of sex, the psychological side of sex, the social side of sex, and the cultural side. You know, we've talked about ageism and some of religion. We haven't really touched on some of the gender expectations that might affect older women's sexuality, but that's more in the cultural realm. And one of those is actually related to lack of partnership for women. So they live longer, which isn't necessarily cultural, but if they live longer, they tend not to pursue other partnerships when their partners pass away, because it's a taboo thing, right? You shouldn't be going out on your as a widower. You shouldn't be enjoying yourself in that way. And certainly as a woman, right, sex is specific for reproduction and within marriage. So they kind of get the short end of the stick in a couple of ways for being older and being a woman. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which is unfortunate. And there are a lot of psychological challenges that go along with aging. We haven't talked a lot about this, but sexual self-esteem is one of the things that I've seen a lot in my research when older adults talk about their wellness goals and their challenges to wellness, is just feeling sexual and feeling desirable as an older adult. You know, looking in the mirror and saying, somebody wants me, or I want to do this, or I feel virile as a person, you know, and sexual. And I think that that's one challenge that really older adults have a lot of, because they're so outside that conception of beauty that our society pushes on everybody, you know. And it's really unfortunate but we are starting to engage, as you said, more of a holistic version of beauty, right, in our society. And hopefully that will extend to age.
Sure. Yeah, so a lot of it has to do with what I call starting a new chapter or restoring our lives. And, you know, the woman whose spouse dies and she's a widow, and as you say, is she allowed to have new relationships, or can she, you know, stay kind of inhibited and kind of in that narrow frame of existence? And it is a matter of kind of redefining ourselves, right? And we start a new chapter and see ourselves, okay, that was a wonderful marriage I had for 20 years or whatever, 50 years, and now it's time to start another chapter. I think the same thing could happen as you talked about the physical or biological changes.
Yes.
For the person who senses they've lost their physical attraction, and they look in their mirror and maybe they've had some disfigurements from surgery, and that's another complicating factor, I'm sure.
Yeah, and you know, I think the one thing that I appreciated so much about your intro when you talk about the Living to 100 Club is this sense of thriving in the face of everything. There is no challenge of aging that isn't surmountable in some way, right? And sex included. Physical challenges, chronic health problems, loss of a partner, feeling stigmatized because of your gender identity, being in a nursing home and having your sexual rights limited. Those are certainly challenges, but we are resilient people. And given supports and resources and strategies and affirming environments, we can get there to those intimate and sexual goals that we have. But it might take a lot of things, right, to get there, depending on how far away you are and how big those challenges are. But the message is that this isn't insurmountable. Right. These challenges are challenges to be vaulted over, right? And to be helped and advocated for when you aren't able to find the answer or get the resources on your own.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, there are always going to be hurdles, right? There's so barriers and potholes, and I tell people that's not a smooth paved road, and we have to find a way to keep getting around these obstacles and navigating to our goals. So let's talk about the same-sex relationships. And I think we've all known of some people who may be divorced from a heterosexual relationship or marriage, and one of the individuals then develops some homosexual relationship. And there's a lot of, again, concerns or uneasiness among family members when that happens. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think being a sexual and gender minority as an older adult is a special experience compared to, let's say, the younger generation, right, of LGBT individuals. And it's a double whammy of stigma for sure, right? At least because mm-hmm. you're older and you're a sexual or gender minority. And if you have a supportive environment, right, in a living arrangement where you're not dependent on others for care or assistance, and you have a great group of friends, and maybe you live in an urban area that has a relatively supportive LGBT community, you probably are set up for success in those ways. But that's not the case for a lot of folks, right? There is still a general prejudice that keeps people closeted for a lot of their lives, including when they go into dependent care, which is a major issue for LGBT older adults, right, is finding affirming residential care or care in later life that allows you to either be who you choose to be with your chosen family, or potentially legal, now that we have legal recourse, to marry partners. But it's definitely a major challenge to hurdle over, right? You need to understand, or the healthcare system needs to understand, that there is a large amount of fear that comes with being either a closeted or out older person who is LGBT, and what kind of care are they going to get? How am I going to be treated? Is my partner going to be able to visit me? Is my partner going to be able to make medical decisions for me? You know, there are a lot of things. Is my chosen family going to be able to support me, or are you going to call my real family that may or may not be supportive of me, and they get legal decision making over me? You know, there are a lot of things to navigate at that point that can be very, I think, scary sometimes as you think about those experiences in your
sure.
life.
Sure. Yeah, definitely. So, and I'm thinking that the location or the cities or towns where individuals live, as you say, how does the community accept, you know, some of these other diverse lifestyles? And, you know, large metropolitan areas, much more progressive, much more enlightened, much more tolerant, accepting. But probably when you get into a lot of rural areas and smaller towns and smaller cities, a lot more challenge for individuals to have this feeling of freedom and sexual expression.
Absolutely. I think freedom is the key word there, right? Not only in freedom to find sexual partners who I'm compatible with and who share my lifestyle, but also finding places for resources and healthcare providers that are quote unquote woke enough, you know, to be able to competently treat me and understand what might be some very unique needs as I age. So, you know, access is a huge issue for both care and just finding people like you who you want to be around and be with and express yourself with. That's all going to lead to your wellness.
Are you aware of any research on this subject where individuals who feel their sexual expression might be stifled, how it affects their longevity? It intuitively makes sense if they're feeling like they're not living their life to, you know, their fullest and in a satisfying way. It could affect their outlook and affect their longevity. Are you aware of any research?
We don't have any yet that would definitively say that for certain, especially when you put in the sort of mediating role of stigma, right? Like, I feel like I don't have my sexual freedom, so therefore, we might know a little bit more about if LGB and trans elders, they certainly have more health disparities. They certainly are at risk for lower longevity than their heterosexual partners for a lot of reasons. And one of them could certainly be, you know, they're not living the lives that they chose, right? Or that they not chose in the sense of I chose my sexual identity, but the life that I want for me, I cannot live it because of these things. So I would guess that that is the case if we had enough research. It's such a difficult thing to do is research older minority groups and minority groups in general, but we have a few really amazing trailblazers who are getting larger samples with LGBT elders that look at health and social inequities and housing and great things, but we have even less and less and less about sexual expression and how that impacts their life.
Wow.
It's a call to arms.
Yeah, I'll say. There, right? Yeah, I mean, aside from the feeling of kind of quality of life issue, it's got to affect the healthcare costs and kind of expenditures for healthcare related to these narrow views on sexual expression and allowing individuals to feel that freedom. So, so there's a lot of factors that, as you say, contribute to some progress, a lot of factors that could really move this further along with our call to arms.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's about time for another break. One area I want to explore, and I know you've done some research on this, is the sexual decision making and the right to make decisions about relationships and sexual encounters with individuals, especially as we look at some declining cognitive ability and, if dementia or Alzheimer's comes into the picture. I think that's an area that I encounter. Anybody working in nursing homes, as you've seen, I'm sure a lot of individuals are just facing some very real quandaries about that. And what can we allow and what can we prevent? So you're ready for that when we return? We'll be picking up on that?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So it looks like it's time for a short break again. Thanks to our listeners for staying with us. We have as our guest Dr. Maggie Syme. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Visit the Living to 100 Club online store. We feature products and wellness information that help maintain healthy lifestyles, promote mental and physical fitness, and allow you to take control of your future. You'll find a wide array of affordable items for staying active, monitoring your health, and adapting to physical changes. Most popular are items for travel, even with your pets, exercise equipment and clothing, heart rate monitors, and personal care items, and our unique Yes, I'm Positive collection. The Living to 100 Club Store offers convenient solutions for active lifestyles. Be sure to spend time on our Learn page for the club's inspiring blog series and add your name to our email list. The Living to 100 Club online store for awareness, convenience, and independence. Find us at livingto100.club. That's livingto100.club.
Sometimes it just seems that nobody understands. There's one individual who can help. If you're living with somebody who faces challenges such as autism, Asperger's, or other exceptional needs, you'll want to tune into Solutions and Strategies with Dr. Sean. Living the Challenge. Together, we'll uncover a variety of solutions to the challenges faced by individuals, their families, and teachers. Listen live every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Have you had a chance to check out Voice America's online magazine and blog? If you love our hosts and shows, check out articles that give an even deeper perspective, plus topics about health and fitness, movie reviews, philosophy, business tips and tactics, spirituality, positive thought, current events, and even more about your favorite hosts. It's just a click away at blog.voiceamerica.com. That's blog.voiceamerica.com. The Voice America Press Blog. All access, all the time.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are listening to the Living to 100 Club with Dr. Joe Casciani. To reach the program today, please call in to 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to info@livingto100.club. Now, back to this week's show.
Okay, we're back. Thanks again to everyone for staying with us. Our guest today is Dr. Maggie Syme, and we're talking about the diversity of sexual expression in older adulthood. Maggie, one area I know you've done a lot of work in and have made some attempts to kind of create some standards for the profession, but let's talk about decision-making capacity in older adults and how this need for sexual expression and sexual relationships can be impacted by a person's cognitive status.
Definitely so. This is something that is very near and dear to me, and part of why I got into this really is that a lot of times in older age, we get treated like children again, right? Instead of being allowed to exercise sexual rights and freedom that you've enjoyed throughout much of your adulthood, you kind of gets flipped on its head and people start to feel like they get to have control again over who you are. And a lot of times this happens in dependent care situations where someone has maybe either a legal or otherwise decision-making power over you. And it could be just influential, right? As we talked about with older, with adult children, it could be just that you allow them to kind of run over you and steer your decisions. But sometimes people have what we would consider legal ability to make decisions for you in certain areas, right? And a lot of work has been done in the past about how people can make different medical decisions for people, or people can, if they can live independently or not. But what we don't know a lot about is what it takes to make a sound, uncoerced, voluntary sexual decision in older adulthood. In particular, when we're talking about maybe having either mild impairment, cognitive impairment, up to severe cognitive impairment. What capacities are involved in making a sound sexual decision? When do we know that they go away? And what do we do if that happens? Including, in my perspective, how do we support as much intimacy and social connection as we can at a low enough level of risk to meet what would be a valued and benefited interaction for an older adult who may not really be able to voice a yes or a no, but can show you that they enjoy this person, that you know from history that they love this person, that they've had a sexual relationship in the past, and how can we meet that all in the middle and pursue an intimacy that fit? So it's a tricky subject, and I don't think nursing homes do it particularly well, but I don't think it's their fault either. There are a lot of things that happen in a nursing home, and somebody told me once that as a field, it is the second most regulated field in all of work, and the top is nuclear power plants. So just under nuclear power plants are nursing. That's how highly regulated they are. So if you can imagine taking all of this complexity into an environment that is so risk averse for good reasons, it can definitely be a challenge to do this well in a person-centered or resident-centered way.
Sure, sure. So we want to allow as much independence and freedom to make decisions, but you know, it's an authority subject, as you say. If a person has some dementia and maybe there's somebody else who's making their healthcare decisions, does that mean this individual cannot have a relationship with a companion?
And I think we don't have a good answer to that, Joe, which is the sad thing, is because we've spent so much time in these different other areas that have a high priority, like medical decisions and whether you can live on your own or not, that we haven't really thought about this because we've just spent most of our time shoving it under the rug and saying, oh, we'll just separate them, they won't know any better, you know, or we'll just do what the adult child wants because we don't want them to yank their parent out of our home. And we just haven't taken a look at how we can do this better enough and tested it to see if it works and to see if, you know, the people who enforce the regulations would agree and say, yeah, you've protected the resident from a foreseeable risk. They don't seem to be in duress. This seems to be a mutually beneficial experience. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
I think that nuance is completely lost, where a lot of times, as you know, when working in a nursing home, it's the physician, the psychiatrist, who does a short screen, potentially, for some cognitive problems, and then they make a blanket decision or a global decision about their ability to make decisions, all the way up from, you know, can you make your own medical decisions and live on your own, to all the way down to, like, essentially, can you bathe yourself? You know, there's so much difference in risk profile in those decisions. It's infuriating to me that we can't see that sex is a different ball game, and that there might be an intimacy. There are many different intimate activities that are very low risk. And why are we treating them like, you know, the right to bear arms, essentially? Mm-hmm. There isn't a lot of things that might be able to happen if you allow someone to hold someone else's hand in a nursing home, you know, and not separate them. You might tick off a couple of adult children, but that also isn't necessarily their call to make.
That's true.
Their parents, even though it feels like it to a lot of people.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. You know, in this highly regulated environment, the facilities are going to take the more conservative approach because they're always under the watchful eye of the Department of Health Services or whoever licenses that facility. Even in assisted living facilities, I think they're just a little bit more narrow in what they can allow and tolerate. You know, I have a question here from one of our listeners. Let me read it to you. My uncle is 76 and wanting to pursue a sexual relationship in the nursing home. He has a companion he'd like to go forward with, but because his family is Catholic and he's only been a widower for a year, it's so taboo, he does not want to hurt his family. Yeah.
I think that those things ring true for many people out there, the stigma and the amount of pressure we put on our family members to uphold these expectations, right? It's very difficult. And I think either you have to come to a personal acceptance that this may not be what my family wants, but this is what I want and what I think is good for me and for my companion, or you decide we're going to have to step it back because I'm not comfortable pushing that limit, and maybe they'd be more comfortable with us being quote-unquote friends you know, then they would seeing us as partners. But it's a balance that you have to have. And in the best case scenario, you have someone like an ombudsman or a social worker who can broker a conversation between the resident, the family, and the resident having an advocate, right, with maybe the ombudsman or someone in their side in the family, and then being able to have a little bit more of maybe a safe space to discuss this with some boundaries around that conversation.
Sure. Yeah. So always weighing that decision, that conflict between my own quality of life and maintaining my family's, you know, relatively positive, accepting image of me. Mm-hmm. I can see that being the crux. What would you say if you were talking to our group of nursing home administrators and just making some recommendations to them? What would you want them to hear?
I think one of the first things I'd want them to hear is that you need to be proactive about sexual expression and intimacy. It's a right, a need, and a benefit for everyone. And we shouldn't be dismissing an entire population just because of where they live or the age that they are or the diagnosis that they have. Have them understand the fundamental humanness of sexuality and intimacy in whatever age, and challenge them to grapple with their own ideas about that. Mm-hmm. You have to have that sort of reckoning, right, of how much of this is my paternalistic or my own beliefs kind of coming out of my work. And then tell them, you need to decide how, as a facility, you're going to address this and address it up front. Have a policy, have guidelines, and that must include a team process. This decision should not be made by one person, whatever their degree is. It should be informed by observations of how the resident is doing in that relationship. If there are positive, happy wellness behaviors, if they're acting out, if they're anxious, you know, because of this relationship, all of that needs to come from the direct staff worker to the administration's policy, to the medical personnel, to the social worker, to say, give me all of the data about this relationship, the amount of risk that's there, the goal for this person, how much kind of autonomy can we assume that they have or ability to communicate to us that this is non-coercive, and how can we meet this need for intimacy or social connection at an acceptable level of risk? Because one thing that I tell everybody is this is not a no-risk situation. There is no no-risk situation. You can't expect that. You have to have an acceptable amount of risk for everything that you do. Even getting in your car and going and picking up the groceries has risk involved. So don't assume that you're going to eliminate all risk. You're just going to have an acceptable amount of it to be able to address and then say, okay, we're here. This activity at this amount of risk with this support and this ongoing monitoring. Yeah. And the team is all on board. And the family is included if they want to be. Or if they have, you know, legal kind of overseeing of the care.
Mm-hmm.
Those are some of the things that I would encourage a nursing home to do as an administration.
Sure. Great. Great advice. Great ideas. And the notion that there's always going to be some risk involved no matter which course we take. But the idea is let's be willing to push limits a little bit, break through some of those barriers, and look at all of the factors involved. And Maggie, looks like we're out of time for today, I'm sorry to say. Thank you for being a guest on our show. I know our listeners are very hungry for more of these expanding views on aging. Special thanks also to our listeners for tuning in today. And when you have a few minutes, please take a look at our newly revised website, living200.club, with some new features for our members. If you haven't signed up yet for our email list, be sure to do so to receive announcements for these radio episodes and our newsletters.
Thanks so much, Joe.
you're very welcome. Thank you again for being a part of this. I'm Dr. Joe Casciotti. You've been listening to the Living 200 Club on the Voice America Network.
thank you for being part of the Living to 100 Club. We hope you'll join Dr. Joe Casciani again next Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, 2 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. Until next week, stay on the right track to mental and physical fitness.